Once again, we'd like to thank Karen and Jake Abelevitz for sponsoring today's Chanukah Locks and Learn in loving memory. Deserves a hand. In loving memory of Jake's beloved parents, Eliyahu ben Abba and Leah Bas Avram. Thank you. And it's a good idea to start with a thank you because our shir is on gratitude. Hakaras HaTov, as it's called in Hebrew. And we're going to explore some of the Jewish sources on this idea of expressing our gratitude, and we are going to, along the way, once again, see some outside sources from the psychological literature, the different books that I used. I didn't bring them with me, but there's one book called Character Strengths and Virtues. So that's a book by a psychologist named Martin Seligman and Christopher Peterson. They basically bring together the studies that they've been doing. Martin Seligman started this field called positive psychology. Basically said to himself around 10, 15 years ago that for so long psychology has been focusing on the negative, how to treat problems. And he said, why don't we focus on how to improve our lives from, the way he said it was, instead of going from a -7 to a -2, from going from a +2 to a +7. So for people who don't necessarily have any psychological problems, but how can we live in an optimal way by researching and doing the psychological research and trying to do interventions to make people who are generally, you know, healthy people, mentally healthy people, to be better people. So one of the things that they've been studying is, you know, happiness, like we spoke about in a lunch and learn once. And one of the main topics that they focus on is gratitude. So we're going to, along the lines, take some research that they did and explore that to see what we can learn from it. So if you look in, before we get to source number one, we're going to give a little bit of a background. So the Jewish perspective on gratitude. So we all know that we're called Yehudim. So Yehudim comes from the word Yehuda, as one of the Shvatim, and Yehuda was named, Leah named him as a thanks to Hashem for giving her this son. Their fourth son, she said, Apam Odes Hashem, I'm going to thank Hashem. Yehuda was named after thanks, and we are called Jews, Yehudim, based on the fact that Yehuda, from Yehuda, and this really symbolizes the fact that we represent gratitude, we represent thanks. The question, though, can be, is there actually a mitzvah of Hakar Satov? So we have to first distinguish between two types of Hakar Satov. There's gratitude towards people, and there's also gratitude towards Hashem. So in terms of gratitude towards people, one can argue that it may be subsumed under the mitzvah of Ahavta L'Reicha Kamocha. That, you know, I would like you to thank me if I do something for you, so I have to thank you if you do something for me. So that could be one source. It's actually not so clear if there's an explicit source, but it could be subsumed under Ahavta L'Reicha Kamocha, that you have to be grateful to other people. What about Hashem? So Ahavta L'Reicha Kamocha, we generally assume, doesn't apply to Hashem. But it could be that if you look through different mitzvos, the backing, the background, the essential part of many mitzvos is Hakaras HaTov, is gratitude to Hashem. And we'll see some as we go along, but just to mention a few, the idea of Bikurim, to bring the first fruits to Hashem, that is in essence an act of gratitude. Thank you, Hashem, for making my field so great and having all this fruit, and I'm going to bring the first fruit to you, Hashem. So that's an idea of Hakaras HaTov. We also have Kibud Av V'Em, as we'll see, respecting your father and mother, has an element of Hakaras HaTov, of gratitude, as well as different Chagim that we celebrate, is to thank Hashem, and we have different Brachot, Birchas HaGomel, that's a thanksgiving to Hashem for saving us from danger. Different tefillot have thanks to Hashem. Tehillim, there's a lot of, if you go through davening, there's a lot of thanks to Hashem. And as well as korbanot, there's a korban toda, is a thank you to Hashem. So all these mitzvot together really show that there is an idea that we need to thank Hashem for all that He does for us and all the great things that He provides for us. So that's the importance of gratitude as a starting point. We'll get to more sources a little bit later on. But that's the importance of gratitude from the Jewish perspective. From the psychological literature, the studies that they've been doing, I'll just quote to you some of the studies, some of the research and conclusions that they, or correlations that they found when they studied gratitude. So number one, as we call this year, grateful living, they actually found that grateful people might actually live longer than non-grateful people. So that's if you wanted any motivation to be grateful, you'll actually live longer. So, or at least you're correlated to live longer. And number two, it's also associated with positive emotions. Grateful people report higher levels of positive emotions, life satisfaction, vitality, and optimism and lower levels of depression and stress. So the more grateful you are, the more happy and optimistic you'll be. There's a book that I actually have on my iPod from my Kindle app called Optimal Functioning. And it's basically, if you want a little excerpt on all these traits that the positive psychologists are researching, this woman gives it's called Optimal Functioning, gives a little brief synopsis of all these different traits, gratitude, vitality, all these type of things. So she quotes a book from a woman, the book's called How of Happiness. I am going to butcher this woman's last name because it's a very difficult last name, but her name is Sonia Lyubomirsky. I apologize if I spelled it wrong, but she says that the way that gratitude boosts your happiness for the following reasons. It promotes savoring of the gifts one experiences in life. It bolsters self-worth and self-esteem. It encourages moral behavior, helps people cope with stress, trauma, and adversity, helps build social bonds, inhibits negative comparisons with others, pushes out and replaces negative emotion, and it thwarts hedonic adaptation or our ability to rapidly adjust to new positive circumstances. These are all great things that if you're a more grateful person, then you'll end up being a happier person for all those stated reasons. It's also correlated with fewer physical symptoms in terms of medical symptoms. You'll feel better about your life as a whole. You'll be more optimistic. You'll have everything good in life is based on gratitude. And actually, it's also, they found correlations between gratitude and religion and spirituality. So they write here, again, quoting from Character, Strengths, and Virtues, a book by Seligman and Peterson. They say, gratitude also correlates with religiousness and spirituality. Those who regularly attend religious services and engage in religious activities, such as prayer or locks and learns or reading religious material, they're more likely to be grateful. So you, by you doing religious things, you yourself will become more grateful. Grateful people are more likely to acknowledge a belief in the interconnectedness of all life and a commitment to and responsibility to others. Grateful individuals place less importance on material goods. They are less likely to judge their own and others' success in terms of possessions and accumulations. They are less envious of wealthy persons, and they are more likely to share their possessions with others relative to less grateful people. So these are all the awesome, great things that happen. When you're grateful, you have all this awesome life, basically. You'll be happy, you'll have better relationship with your friends, and you yourself will feel better about yourself, the fact that you are grateful. Some of the negatives of ingratitude. The philosopher, 18th century Scottish philosopher David Hume, which we might not agree with everything he says, but he has one quote on ingratitude which I thought was very good. Of all the crimes that human creatures are capable of committing, the most horrid and unnatural is ingratitude, especially when it is committed against parents. So shout out to the parents. So he says that ingratitude is a terrible thing, and it's one of the worst crime that you could possibly do is to have ingratitude towards somebody who did something nice to you. And if you look now in source number one, in terms of the Jewish sources, you'll see the negative outlook that Chazal had on ingratitude. So this is from the Medrash, the Mishnas Rabbi Eliezer. The translation here in English is by Rabbi Fendel. And it's basically talking about something that happens in a few parshas from now. And it says, "Mipnei ma'anash ha'kasav b'yoseh l'kfuyei tov." How come the psukim are so severely chastise ungrateful individuals? So it says, "Mipnei shehu ke'inyan kefira ba'kadosh baruch hu." If you're ungrateful to somebody else, you will end up being disavowing Hashem. You'll stop being, you'll be basically go against Hashem. How? So he says like this, he quotes this idea from Paro. Chenu omer beparo, asher lo yaldes Yosef. The pasuk says that Paro did not know Yosef. So it says, v'alo ad hayom hazeh Mitzrayim yodim chasto sheYosef. Of course they knew. Yosef basically fixed the economic system in Mitzrayim. How could it be that Paro didn't know Yosef? Elo shehe yodeyav lo ishkiach lav. He knew Yosef, but he didn't care. The kafa tovaso. He had ingratitude towards Yosef. He didn't care about the great that Yosef did to him, to the whole Mitzrayim. Ulvasof, the Midrash says, kafa tovaso shalakadosh baruch hu. This eventually led to the fact that he also denied the greatness and the gratitude that he owed to Hashem himself. Shenamar, the pasuk says, lo yadati es Hashem. Paro says that he didn't know who God was. And the Midrash is saying, if you have a relationship with a human being and you don't feel gratitude towards them and they do great things for you, you'll eventually also be ungrateful to Hashem, because Hashem does great things for you. But if you don't have this midah, this character trait of gratitude, of hakaras hatov, not only will it affect your relationship with people, it'll also affect your relationship with Hashem. And if you look in source number 2, there's an interesting pasuk. The pasuk says, "Lo yavu amoni u'moavi b'kal Hashem," that an Ammonite or Moabite cannot come into the Jewish people. So this is, even if they convert, we don't allow them to come into the group of the Jewish people. And the Ramban there in source number 3 explains why is this. Why is it that the Ammonites and the Moabites can't come into the Kahal Hashem? Vanira elai ki akasuv hirchik shnei achim ha'ele shayu gimule chesed mi'Avram. Avram did great favors to Ammon and Moab. Shehitzel aviyem v'ima min acher v'ashevis. Because Avram saved Lot, the father, the grandfather of Ammon and Moab, and they didn't care. And what happened? They, when Bnei Yisrael, if you look back in source number 2, when Bnei Yisrael were in the desert, they didn't give them water. They refused to give them any bread or water when they're in the desert. They weren't threatening them. They just needed some bread and water. They didn't give it to them. But the fact that they were ungrateful, Avram, the father of the Jewish people, did such greatness for them, for their forefathers, and they didn't pay that back. They were ungrateful back to the Jewish people. Therefore, they cannot come into the Jewish people. And Rabbi Eliyahu Lapian says, right, you might think that this is a punishment, right? They didn't do good for us, so we're not going to do good for them. They can't come be part of us. But he says that's not what it means. What does it mean? It means that if they're ungrateful, they can't come into the Kahal Hashem. They can't be the Jewish people. Because what did we say? The Jewish people symbolize Hakaras HaTov. Yehuda, Yehudim, symbolizes Hakaras HaTov. These people didn't have Hakaras HaTov to us for what we did. It's not a punishment that we don't want them to be a part of us. They can't be a part of us because we symbolize Hakaras HaTov and they symbolize ingratitude. So that's just some of the pluses of gratitude and the minuses of ingratitude. But we want to ask ourselves a fundamental question. When we say you have to have gratitude towards somebody, you could explain it in two possible ways. Is it that I need to have gratitude for them because of a sort of a reciprocity, that I have something good for them, they have to do something good for me, right? Or I have to do something to them because they did something good to me. It's basically, you know, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. Or is there something deeper than that? So if you look in, well, you don't have this in the sources, I apologize again, but this is a quote from a book, again, Character, Strengths, and Virtues. They quote Adam Smith. So Adam Smith proposed that gratitude was an essential social emotion, and gratitude, according to Smith, is one of the primary motivators of benevolent behavior towards a benefactor. And they say, following this line of thought initiated by Smith, the sociologist Simmel argued that gratitude was a cognitive emotional supplement to sustain one's reciprocal obligations. Sorry. Reciprocal obligations. It's been a long night. Reciprocal obligations. So he basically says that the reason why we have to be grateful to other people is because this is how society runs. By us being grateful to others, they're grateful to us, and this way we'll have a nice, friendly society, and the society could run nice and smoothly. However, a quote from Kierkegaard, which I didn't look at inside, but I saw it quoted. This is in a book called Psychology of Gratitude. And it's a whole textbook, and one of the chapters is actually the Jewish approach to gratitude. It's actually pretty well written, and I was shocked because it doesn't have the Christian approach to gratitude or anything. There's one chapter in the secular book about the Jewish approach to gratitude, so it was actually some good sources in there. But in a different chapter, it's a quotes Kierkegaard suggested that in thankfulness, a person's relationship to God and others gives birth to a self-awareness that constitute his being. That it's not just about you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours, and about setting up a society where people do good things for each other because this way society will work. But by me having gratitude to other people and to God, that does something to me. That develops my own inner being. So it's not just about reciprocity, it's also about developing an inner midah, an inner character trait to have this gratitude and to be a grateful person. So what's the nafka mina? What's the difference if I say it's about me doing something because you did something to me, or it's about developing a trait within myself? So one possible difference is, do you have to have gratitude towards an inanimate object? Right? If it's all about humans living together in a nice, friendly society, then if something, you know, this coffee does a great thing to me, and I know it helps me give the shiur this morning, so do I have to have gratitude to this cup of coffee? Do I have to have gratitude to something that's inanimate? So it's actually, the Torah does have something to say about this. If you look in source number 4. Source number 4 is a quote from Rashi. So we all know that when Moshe Rabbeinu was told to, when the miracles in Egypt happened and the 10 plagues happened, Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't do the first 3 miracles. Hashem tells Aaron to, you do the first 3 plagues. Why? Rashi says, source number 4, Amor al Aaron, say to Aaron, Lefisha hagina yor al Moshe kishenishlach letocho, lefichach lo laka al yado lo bedam, lo besfardayim vilaka al yedei Aaron. So the first Makos of the hitting the water, the Nile turned to blood, Moshe couldn't do that. Why? Because the water saved Moshe when he was a young little baby and he was in the water and Bas Paro took him from the water. So Moshe had to have a karsa tov to this water. Moshe couldn't hit the water. He couldn't hit the ground because the ground covered up the Egyptian that he killed. So he can't have ingratitude towards these inanimate objects. Why? Why do I care if you have gratitude towards an inanimate object? It's not, that thing's not going to now decide, oh, so now I'll do a favor back to him because, you know, he did that favor to me, so I'm going to do a favor back. That doesn't have to do with it. It's an inanimate object. So rather it seems, and this is the conclusion that Rabbi Dessler and others make from this source, is that it's not about just reciprocity. It's about developing a midah of hakaras hatov within you. A midah that you exude gratitude. That's who you are. Your being is gratitude. And there's a story that I saw in a book called Everyday Holiness, which I highly recommend for those who want to learn a little bit more about midos and working on Musar. It's a very practical book written towards the modern community, Jewish and from community, but how to use Musar to, you know, be better people. So he has a chapter on gratitude, and he quotes the following story about Rav Yeruchim Levavitz. So the rabbi, Rav Yeruchim Levavitz, who was alive around, I guess, 100 years ago or so, the rabbi had a special fund from which his yeshiva students could borrow money. So one year, a young man borrowed some money to travel home for Passover. So this man, this student borrowed money from the rabbi to go home. And now he comes back, and he comes and he thanks the rabbi. Thank you so much for lending me this money. And he gives back, he returns the money. But what happened? The rabbi yelled at him. Why did he yell at him? Because there's actually a law that you can't express your gratitude to somebody who lends you a loan. It's actually part of the aveira of ribbis. You can't loan somebody with interest, and there's a lot of complicated laws about ribbis, about lending with interest. But one of the things is that you can't even express your gratitude towards the person, because that's as if, you know, you're paying him back more than he actually gave you. So that is one of the laws. So the rabbi yells at him, you can't thank me for what I did. Don't thank me for what I did. The next year, he borrows money again to go home for Pesach, and he comes back, and he doesn't thank him. But the rabbi, Rav Yeruchim Levavitz, comes up to him and says, how can you not thank me? I lent you this money. It's like, rabbi, what do you want from me? Last year you told me I can't thank you. And now you're yelling at me because I didn't thank you? So he said, you're right. You shouldn't thank me. You can't thank me. It's against the law to thank me. But I was looking at you. You weren't even bothered by the fact that you couldn't thank me. You have to ingrain yourself this idea of gratitude, this trait of gratitude, that even if you can't say thank you to somebody, you want to say thank you, and there's an inner struggle with you that you have to say thank you, and then you have to say, wait a second, I can't say thank you. And if you think this is impractical, I actually think this is very practical, and it was very practical for me this morning. So this morning I came here on the bus. So everybody knows you have to thank the bus driver. So you have the second grade shiur in Hakaras HaTov is, but the bus driver is doing it for his own reason. It's his job. So you still have to thank him because he's still doing a nice thing for you. But the way the bus system works is actually very much against gratitude, because they tell you to get off in the back of the bus. They want you to get off in the back of the bus. But I don't want to get off in the back of the bus. I want to get off in the front of the bus so I can thank the bus driver. But if I get off in the front of the bus, then people are going to be upset at me because they're trying to get on the bus and they tell me to get off in the back of the bus. So I had to get off in the back of the bus. But when I got off in the back of the bus, I was bothered by the fact that I couldn't say thank you to the bus driver in front. Do you just run out of the bus and say, oh, too bad, he lost his thank you. What do I care about this guy? He doesn't want me to say that. I won't say thank you to him. Or do you struggle with the fact that you want to say thank you, and you know, you in your mind you say to yourself, thank you. This is actually not the only time where society discourages good midos. If you go to any library, and I know we have at least one librarian in the crowd, if you go to any library, they will tell you, do not restack the books on the shelf. So I know, growing up, you take a book out, you have to put the book back. But the librarians do not want you to put the books back on the shelf because you're going to put them in the wrong place, and they also like to keep track of what books are taken out. So I've been to numerous libraries where they have signs that say, do not put the book back on the shelf, and they don't want you to do it. So when you get to save time because you get to throw the books on the rack and you get to run out, does that bother you that you can't do this? Thank them for putting the book back. It bothers me a little bit. I would always like to put the book back. I think that's the nicer thing to do. But if they don't want it, you can't do it. But the point is that these midos aren't just something about reciprocity and doing something nice for somebody else because he did something nice to you and being thankful because he did something nice to you. It's about building your own self, being a gracious person. And as we said, that'll help you in being a happier person. As we started out this year, quoting all that psychological research. So I want to just bring another few extreme examples of Hakaras HaTov that we find in different Midrashim and different Psukim to try to see how I think that this is definitely true, that Hakaras HaTov is about building your own midos, even if it has nothing to do with the person who did something good for you. So if you look in source number 5 is a Medrash from Parshas Matos, and it's talking about the fact that Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu to destroy Midian. Hashem says, Moshe, you go destroy Midian. But if you look in the Psukim, Moshe goes and tells somebody else to destroy Midian. So how can Moshe tell somebody? Hashem told Moshe to go do it. So how can he tell somebody else to go do it? So the Medrash says, Vayishachal sam Moshe. Moshe sent somebody else to do it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu amar l'Moshe, nakom ba'atzmecha v'usholeach l'acherim. Hashem tells Moshe to go avenge them, fight them by himself, and he goes send somebody else to do it. Ella al yedei shenisgadol b'midyan amar eino bedin shani meitzar l'misha asuli tova. Since Moshe grew up in some of his formative years in Midyan, it doesn't make sense. It's impossible for me to go hit them, to go fight them. Even though Hashem told him to do it, Rav Chaim Shmulevitz points out that Moshe knew that he had to reinterpret what Hashem says, because it can't be that Hashem meant that Moshe should personally go destroy Midian, because he owes Hakaras HaTov to them. He owes gratitude towards them, and it can't be that Hashem wanted him to destroy Midian. But let's think about this for a second. So Moshe felt this overwhelming Hakaras HaTov, this overwhelming gratitude to Midian because he grew up there. Does it really make a difference to Midian if Moshe kills them or somebody else kills them? They're dead anyway. Right? Who cares who kills them? But the point is that it's not for them. It's for Moshe. It's that Moshe has to have this gratitude within him. He has to embody this midah of Hakaras HaTov regardless of the person or people who he's doing this for or showing that Hakaras HaTov to. They don't care if they're dead through him or through somebody else. They're dying. So who does he care? But it doesn't matter. Moshe has to have this Hakaras HaTov. It can't be. Moshe couldn't bring himself to do it because he himself had that Hakaras HaTov towards Midian. So I think those two sources are very clear that Hakaras HaTov is not about reciprocity. It's about me instilling a midah within myself. And there's a few more sources that you could argue that they might not be such good proofs, but I think they're important anyway while we're learning about Hakaras HaTov to go through them. There's a source number 6. It says, Lo sisa'iv mitzri ki ger ayisi bartso. You cannot despise an Egyptian because you were a ger, you were a sojourner in his land. The mitzvim weren't that good to us. Right? If anything, you could make a very strong argument that we do not have to care about the mitzvim. And we could hate them. Why do I have to like the mitzvim? They weren't very nice to us. Right? And even if you want to say that they did nice things for us before they became mean to us, it's a hard argument to make that I have to show gratitude to somebody who's, even though 50 years ago, he was so nice to me, but for the past 49 years, he's been enslaving me and, you know, wanted to kill all my babies, right? That's not somebody who we should have a karas hatov to. But the pasuk says you cannot despise them, because at the end of the day, they did put you up in their land and they were nice to you at some point in time. And the point is that even if you want to make the argument, the way I understand this, is that even if you want to make the argument that I don't owe hakaras hatov to the mitzvah themselves because they aren't nice people, but I owe it to myself. If somebody did something kind for me, I have to have hakaras hatov for that act of kindness, regardless of whether I'm going to be best friends with this guy or not, because at the end of the day, we know we're not best friends with the Egyptians because they enslaved us. But it's for me. That hakaras hatov is for me. Do I have to have hakaras hatov to somebody who did something for selfish reasons? Right, the guy, he didn't do it for me, he did it for somebody else. He did it for himself. He did something that happened to have affected me in some way or another, but do I have to have, he didn't do it for me, he did it for himself. He's a selfish guy. It helped me, okay, do I have to have a karas hatov for him? So the Chovos HaVavos says that you do. He actually quotes that any rather negative view of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro relationships, he says that you can make the argument that any relationship that you have between a person and somebody else is really, anything I do good for you is not altruistic. It's really a selfish reason. And he delineates five different relationships, whether it's a parent to a child, a master to a slave, a rich person to a poor person, or different friends, or whether it's a strong person over a weak person. Either way, no matter what, he says, no matter what the relationship is, I can argue to you that the person who does it, even the father to the child, the father to the son, the parent to the child, I'm giving tzedakah to somebody who needs money. I'm not doing it for them, I'm doing it for me. Whether it's because I like to see my children grow up and it makes me feel good, or whether it's because by me doing an act of chesed, it makes me feel good also. It's not altruistic, it's real, and this is actually a machlokas in the psychologist, whether empathy, right, helping that stems from empathy, that if I help somebody because I feel bad for them, is really an altruistic thing, that I'm doing it because it's not for me, it's really only for them, and I'm completely uninvolved in this, or no. There's one opinion that says, and I think that he would agree with this Chovos HaVavos, is that even when you do something good for somebody else, it's not altruistic, it's really selfish. You want yourself to feel good, or you want to get Olam Haba, you want to merit the world to come, you want Hashem to be on your side, so you're going to do good deeds, you're going to do this good act, because that's what you know Hashem wants you to do. Either way, he says that everybody's acting or could act from selfish reasons. But he says, obviously, you still need to have a karas hatov to them. You still need to have a karas hatov to your parents, even if you want to argue that they're doing it for selfish reasons. Personally, I like to think that people are a little bit more altruistic than that. But even if somebody is doing something for selfish reasons, you still need to have a karas hatov and gratitude for them. The reason why the Chovos HaLevavos sort of downplays the Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, the man-to-man relationship, and says that everybody's really doing this for selfish reasons, is actually he has a ulterior motive. And his motive is going to lead us to the next part of the shir, which is that he was saying that look at all these people. They're not doing it for the right reasons, but you still have to have a karas hatov. Kal v'chomer, all the more so do you need to have a karas hatov to Hashem. Hashem does it, it's not for him, it's completely for you, he's completely doing everything for your benefit, he does everything you need, he provides for, and so for all these people you have a karas hatov for, all the more so you have to have a karas hatov for Hashem. So now I want to look at this relationship between a karas hatov between people and a karas hatov with Hashem. So we quoted from Kierkegaard before that, and pay attention to how he says this, in thankfulness, a person's relationship to God and others gives birth to a self-awareness that constitutes his being. And this is sort of the way we've been presenting until now, that any midah, any expression of hakaras hatov that I show is really to develop myself, to develop my own inner being. But we could question if that's a true Jewish approach to hakaras hatov. Why? Because at the end of the day, Kierkegaard says that it's the Bein Adam L'Chaveiro and the Bein Adam L'Makom basically lead up to the Bein Adam L'Atzmo. It leads up to your own self. By me being grateful to Hashem and to others, it helps develop me. But from the Jewish sources, it seems, as we'll see from the Sefer HaChinuch and others, and like we just quoted from the Chovos HaLevavos, that the end point is not me. The end point is not for me to be a better person, necessarily. The end point is really for me to realize that Hashem is really behind everything, and for me to have gratitude to Hashem for all that He does to me. And this is brought out in the Sefer HaChinuch. We'll develop it a little bit in a few minutes. But the Sefer HaChinuch basically says, the mitzvah of respecting and honoring your parents. What's the reason we have to do that? So he says, "Mishar she mitzvah zu shiroi lo la'adam shiyakir v'yigmal chesed l'misha asa imotov." It's not in the source sheets, I apologize. That the point of the mitzvah of honoring your parents is that you have to have a karas hatov. Your parents do so much for you, you have to appreciate what they do for you. V'lo ye navo misnaker v'kafui tov. You can't be an ingracious person. Shezu mida ra u'me'usa b'taklas l'fnei ha'alkim v'anashim. To be ungrateful, as David Hume said, is a terrible, terrible trait. And as he said, it was a crime. And that's what the Sefer HaChinuch says. That's why I have to honor my parents, because they do so much for me, I have to be grateful to them. But the Sefer HaChinuch doesn't stop there. He says, "Kishe yikba zos hamida benavsho, yala mimena lahakir tobas hakel baruchu." Once you instill, by me showing honor and respecting my parents, which comes from gratitude, then I will realize that Hashem is really behind everything. It instills within me this midah bakaras hatov, but not for myself. Not that I could be a happier person. That might be important. And me honoring my parents and respecting my parents and showing hakaras hatov to my parents is obviously important, and it's very important. However, he says that there's something behind that. There's something deeper behind that, and that's for me to realize that really everything is to have hakaras hatov for Hashem. Have hakaras hatov to your friends, to your parents, to everything. That's definitely important, but at the end of the day, it goes back to the original source, to Hashem, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rabbi Tatz, Rabbi Akiva Tatz, in a book called Letters to a Buddhist Jew, he discusses this, and I think he puts it very nicely. I'll just read it to you. You don't have it inside. "Beyond the obvious correctness in showing appropriate gratitude and honor to parents, there is something more. Relating to your parents turns you to focus on your point of origin, your source. The effort of looking to causes will train the mind to look to causes of those causes too. And ultimately, the sensitized mind will trace all things back to their root cause, capital C, meaning HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is why honoring parents is one of the Ten Commandments, and that is why it is located in the first five. The first five of the Ten Commandments we generally view as Bein Adam L'Makom, as the mitzvot being between Hashem and man. The second half are Bein Adam L'Chavero, is between man and his friend. So, Kibud Av'Em is number five, which is on the first half. But Kibud Av'Em, I have to respect my parents are people. But no, there's an element in Kibud Av'Em of Bein Adam L'Makom also. Like the Sefer HaChinuch says, by me respecting my parents and showing Hakaras HaTov to my parents, I will ultimately get to Hakaras HaTov and Hashem. And Rabbi Tatz points out, that's why it's the last of the five, because it is the link between man-God and man-man relationships. That's the point, is that Hakaras HaTov is important. Bein Adam L'Chavero is important, but it's also the link between Bein Adam L'Chavero and Bein Adam L'Makom, between my relationship with my parents and my relationship with Hashem. So the end point is not necessarily me or the person in front of me. It's really to realize the root cause of thing, which is Hashem. Now, you could argue, and I think that this is true, is that the reason why Hashem gives us mitzvos is for our own benefit. So if that's true, then it turns out that even though the reason why I have to have a karas hatov to people is so I can have a karas hatov to Hashem, but the reason why Hashem wants me to have a karas hatov to Him is because that'll in effect make me a better person. So it all really is linked together. There are all these three things, Bein Adam L'Chavero, having relationship, a good relationship and a karas hatov to friends, to parents, and having a good relationship of a karas hatov with Hashem, all leads up to building you within you, for you to be a happier person, for you to be a better person, because instilling the midah within you is the point that we're going for. It's not just about doing nice things, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. It's about instilling the midah and realizing that Hashem is really behind all actions. And now I just want to take this from the theoretical to the practical. So in this book, Character, Strengths, and Virtues, he basically distinguishes between four types of gratitude. Not four types of gratitude, but four, the way he calls it, are four facets of gratitude. So the first facet of gratitude is gratitude intensity. So what's that referring to? So a person with a strong grateful disposition who experienced a positive event would be expected to feel more intensely grateful than would someone with less disposed towards gratitude. So gratitude intensity is how grateful are you for each thing that happens to you. So somebody who has less gratitude intensity, you do a favor for them, so they say thanks, you know, and that's it. Somebody with more gratitude intensity will be like, wow, that was so great, I really appreciate that. They'll feel it more, they'll feel that gratefulness more. So that's gratitude intensity. You have to really mean it. That's something, that's one thing that we can work on, is how intense is our gratitude for things that people and for Hashem, that Hashem does for us. The second element, the second facet of gratitude, he says, is gratitude frequency. How frequently are you grateful for things that happen? So you could be grateful once a day for something that happens. But if you really open your eyes to what Hashem does for you and what for people do to you for you, you'll realize that you'll have to be grateful more often throughout the day. It's not just your frequency of gratitude. It's not just once. It's not just twice. Throughout the day, you'll be more grateful. That's something else, gratitude frequency, to sort of open your eyes to how grateful you are, how often during the day are you grateful. Number three, he says, is gratitude span. Gratitude span refers to the number of life circumstances for which a person feels grateful at a given time. Someone with a strong grateful disposition might be expected to feel grateful for his or her family, job, health, and life itself, along with a wide variety of other benefits. How grateful at this moment am I for the, not just somebody did me a favor, but for the bigger picture, the fact that I'm healthy, or that I have family, or that look at the positive. How grateful am I for all those things that I don't necessarily think about on a daily basis? And I would recommend, and it's something that I try to work on, when you say at the end of davening, at the end of Shemona Esrei, the bracha of, we have a bracha that thanks Hashem, Ve'ala kol Hashem, right? We say, we thank Hashem for everything that He does. So one of the suggestions that I've heard, I think I saw it in the book, I forgot where, is that when you, before you bow down at the end of that bracha, where you say, Baruch Hashem, Atov Shimcha, Lachana Elohodos, before you bow down for that bracha, to thank Hashem, think. Do this exercise in your mind for all the things that you're grateful for. And not just that, again, that somebody gave me a gift today, but think about the fact that I'm grateful that I have a loving husband, a loving wife, so many great children, grandchildren, the fact that I have a relationship with Hashem, the fact that I'm happy, I'm healthy, I have a job, everything that we usually take for granted, think about that, and when you bow down to Hashem, that'll increase your gratitude to Hashem and really instill this midah within you that you're grateful for everything. That's gratitude span. How many things right now, at this moment, am I grateful for? And when you think about it, we say Dayenu in the Haggadah, Dayenu goes through each step. If this didn't happen, I would still be thankful. If this didn't happen, I would still be thankful. Every step of the way, we would be thankful for, even if it didn't happen. And that also teaches us another lesson, not just to be thankful for everything that every step, everything that happens to us, also that you have to be thankful for things that don't even come into fruition. We're thankful to you, Hashem, for this, even though it might not have happened. Even if it didn't happen, we would still be thankful to you. So if somebody does a favor for you, but it doesn't come, right? He fell short. He wasn't able to go through with it. He tried his hardest, but it just didn't come through. So what do you say? Oh, you didn't finish the job, so I'm not going to be thankful to you? No, even if it didn't come through, you still have to be thankful for whatever that person did for you. And the fourth facet of gratitude is gratitude density. I think this is a very important one. When you think about it, so let's say you do a favor for me. So I could just thank you for what you did for me, and that's good. But let's say there was something behind your favor also. I have to think and go back to the source of where that thing came from. So let's take an example of bread. So I go to the baker. The baker has this wonderful piece of bread for me, and he gives me this wonderful loaf of fresh bread. So I could thank the baker for this wonderful bread that he baked. But if you think about it, it's that bread didn't get there from just the baker. There were people in the fields, there were people who made the eggs, there were people who made the sugar, there were people who made all these things together, and you could even be creative about it. I could thank the baker's wife for, you know, getting him up early in the morning. I say you could be creative about it, but the point is that any grateful action that happens, it's not just that action right then. There's really something that happens before that leads into that grateful action. So looking in source number 7, you find this idea in another medrash. The medrash says that the pasuk says that when Moshe saved, I think we mentioned this in the drasha yesterday, in a different context, but when Moshe saved the Benos Yisro. So the Benos Yisro said, Ish Mitzri Itzilanu. An Egyptian man saved us. An Egyptian man saved us. What is this referring to? So the Medrash says, this can be comparable to the following mashal. This is the parable. This is compared to a man bitten by a lizard who ran to place his feet in water, which was a purported remedy. When he put them in the river, he saw a child drowning. He reached out and saved him. The child exclaimed, "If not for you, I would have drowned." To which the man replied, "It was not I who saved you, but the lizard who bit me and from which I escaped." Thus, the daughters of Yisrael told Moshe, "Thank you for saving us." To which Moshe replied, "It's the Egyptian whom I killed and on whose account I was subsequently forced to run away who saved you." Therefore, they said, an Egyptian man saved us. The reason why they said an Egyptian man saved us is because Moshe said, it wasn't me who saved you. It was because of the guy I killed that made me run over here, and now I was in this place at the right time, and I was able to save you. So Moshe was looking back. It wasn't just me right now. It was really what happened before, and that led up to this. And if you keep going back, right, what does it really lead up to? It really goes back to Hashem, right? Everything comes back to Hashem. So this is a good exercise for us to do in gratitude density, to think and to go back how everything, it's not just the piece of bread in front of me, right? How did this food get here? It wasn't just, you know, the person who brought it over. It wasn't just the person who baked it. It wasn't just, it's all these things together. Don't look at it from a limited view. Look at it through gratitude density, through looking at through everything that happened to get to the stage where you're at right now. If we look at some of the obstacles to gratitude, so obstacles to gratitude include, this is also quoting from the book Character, Strengths, and Virtues. Obstacles to gratitude include the perception that one is a passive victim, a sense of entitlement, a preoccupation with materialism, and a lack of self-reflection. The capacity for reflection and contemplation, the ability to savor one's positive experiences, and the ability to relinquish some self-sufficiency in order to recognize that others may be responsible for one's successes are additional factors that might encourage gratitude. So just to pick out a few of these obstacles to gratitude, entitlement and expectation. Things are coming to me. I expect this to happen, or I believe that it should happen. I deserve this. If that's your attitude, you will be grateful for a lot less things that you should be grateful. Nothing should be expected. Nothing should be entitled. You're not entitled to anything. Everything is a greatness either from the person who did it for you or from Hashem. And the research done, Dr. Pelkovitz pointed out this source for me, and in general, I appreciate Dr. Pelkovitz, David Pelkovitz from YU, as my teacher in many classes, sort of sparked my interest in positive psychology. So he pointed out this source by somebody named Bartal. The study shows that people tend to be more grateful for the unexpected. They experience less gratitude for benefits rendered by someone who is close to them than by someone who is less close to them. So if the person, and this is a big problem or something we need to work on in terms of relationship with husband and wife or with children, people that are close to you are usually less grateful for. Your parents, that may be one of the reasons why Kibbutz Avim is such an important mitzvah, because you can make so many excuses why your parents should have done what they did for you, whether they had ulterior motives or selfish motives. They have to do this for me. It's their responsibility to pay my tuition. No, that's not what it is. It's not a sense of entitlement. To people close to us, we can't just, you know, stomp over them and forget all the greatness that they do for us. You have to don't take for granted everything. Be appreciative of everything that your wife does for you, everything that your husband does for you, even if it happened every day for the past 70 years. Every day, the breakfast comes this day also, it's been happening for the past 70 years, it doesn't matter. Thank you for the breakfast. Don't take anything for granted, because we're in most danger of taking for granted the people that we care about most and the people that we're closest to. Therefore, it's very important that you remember to be grateful for everything that they do for you. And in terms of this, an habituation to get used to things that we don't appreciate them, I had this source, and then Rabbi Toker put it actually in the newsletter for this week. He quoted the Sfas Emes, so I'll quote it again just in case you didn't see it. But the Sfas Emes says, bringing this now into Hanukkah, we've been talking about gratitude for a long time, now we just want to relate it to Hanukkah. The Sfas Emes says that there's a famous Gemara. The Gemara says the time frame for lighting Hanukkah candles is Mishatishka Achama, from when the sun goes down, Achatichla Rega Minashuk, until literally, the people stop walking in the marketplace. But the Sfas Emes says that the word rego, which means foot, can also be understood, an additional level of interpretation, as hergel, meaning to be habituated to something. Achetichla hergel min ashuk. The point of lighting the Hanukkah candles, he says, is to take away this hergel, this habituation to things, to take things for granted, to not realize all the great things that people and that Hashem do for you. The point of lighting the Hanukkah candles is to take away this habituation, whether it's for gratitude or whether for it's any mitzvah that we do. Sometimes we get stuck in this routine and this rote of davening and benching that we don't pay attention to what we're doing. He's saying Hanukkah candles, the point is to take that hergel, take that habituation, and re-spark the fire. Every day should be, everything you do should really come with a new perspective and not just the same perspective that you've been having and you're sort of, you know, sick of it and you've been doing the same thing for 70 years and you don't take it for granted. So that's the point of Hanukkah candles, to take away this hergel, to take away this habituation. And there's actually, we could go deeper with this, with Hanukkah candles and gratitude. So the Gemara says that after the miracle of Hanukkah happened, they established a holiday, Lahodos Ulahalo, to thank, Lahodos to thank, gratitude, Akar Satov, and Lahalel to praise Hashem. That's what Hanukkah is all about, to thank and to praise Hashem. The Rambam has an interesting opinion here. So if you look, what is Lahalel? Lahalel means, to say Hallel, we say Hallel on Hanukkah, we praise Hashem. What is Lahodos? What does that mean to thank Hashem? Just to get up and to say thank you? Or is it referring to something else? So Rashi says that what does Lahodos mean? Lahodos means Al Anisim. We say Al Anisim on Hanukkah to thank Hashem for the miracles that He has done for us. And it's interesting, when do we say Al Anisim? We say it in the bracha of Hodah, in Shmona Esrei, when we're thanking Hashem, and we're saying, Modim Anachnu Lach, thank you Hashem, for everything you're doing for us, we insert Al Anisim in there, to thank Hashem for the miracles that He's done for us. But the Rambam doesn't seem to say that. The Rambam says that, Mibnei Zeit Kinu, you don't have the source again, I'm just reading it for you, Mibnei Zeit Kinu, Shebaoso Ador, Sheyu Shmonas Hayamim Ha'elu, Shetchilasa Melach HaMishav Esim B'Kislev, the reason why we instituted, Chazal instituted Hanukkah, Yimei Simcha the Hallel Umadlikin Bahen HaNeros. The Rambam says that they're days of happiness, and Hallel and praise, and we light the candles. So the problem is that the Rambam doesn't use the same words of the Gemara. The Gemara says, Lahodos u'Hallel. The Rambam says, Simcha v'Hallel u'Madlikin asaneros. So is the Rambam just changing the Gemara? What is the Rambam doing here when he changes the words of the Gemara? So one explanation, I don't think that this is the actual pshat, the actual what the Rambam intended to mean, but based on what we said in the beginning, so again, the Rambam changes Hodah to Simcha, gratitude to happiness. So it's too modern of an explanation, but what we said in the beginning was that gratitude itself is the way to get to happiness. By being grateful, you yourself will be happy. So maybe it's Yimei Simcha v'Hallel, because instead of Hodah, instead of gratefulness and thankfulness and Hallel, it's Simcha v'Hallel, because what we said in the beginning was that gratitude and Simcha are really overlap. Being a grateful person really increases your Simcha. So maybe that's what the Rambam meant, I doubt it, but just interesting on what we've been saying. However, what the Rambam probably did mean, and I saw this, Rabbi Sobolovsky from YU said this in a shir, and I saw it in the book called Nisim V'Niflos by Rabbi Don Bloomberg, but he says that the Rambam doesn't mention Al Anisim. Hodah doesn't make the Al Anisim doesn't make the cut according to the Rambam. That's not what the Gemara meant when it said Lahodos u'Lahalo. So what is the Hodah according to the Rambam? So they both of them say that the Hodah itself, the thankfulness, is the lighting of the candles. According to Rashi, the thankfulness is Al Anisim, is saying Al Anisim in davening. According to the Rambam, what's the gratitude to Hashem? The actual lighting of the Hanukkah menorah, that itself is our gratitude, is our Hakaras HaTov to Hashem. And just to bring that down a little bit in the concluding part of the shir, what is the connection between lights and gratitude, lighting candles for Hashem and Hodah? So if you look in source number 8, it says Rashi in Parshas Bamidbar. Rashi in Parshas Bamidbar, where it says Baloscha, tells Aaron, you will light the candles in the Mishkan. So the Rashi asks, based on the Medrash, Lama nismecha Parshas HaMenorah leParshas HaNasiim. How come the Parsha of lighting the menorah in the Mishkan is connected right after the Parsha where all the Nasiim, all the priests, gave their gifts to the Mishkan? So Rashi explains, Lefisha Kishara, excuse me. When Aaron saw that all these priests were bringing all these Nesiim were bringing all these wonderful things to the Mishkan, he became sad. Why? He wasn't involved in this installment of the Mishkan. Aaron had nothing to do. Lo hu velo shifto. He didn't have anything to do with it. His tribe had nothing to do with it. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem said to him, Chayach, I promise you, Shalcha gedola mishalahem. You'll have a greater thing than they will. Sha'ata madlik umeitiv asaneros. Because you will light the candles in the Mishkan. So Aaron was sad when it came to dedications in the Mishkan. He couldn't dedicate anything. Hashem told only the Nesiim could dedicate. Not Aaron, not his tribe. So Aaron was sad, but what did Hashem say? You'll have a better job than them. What's your job? Your job will be to light the Chanukah menorah. So Rav Chaim Shmuel, not the Chanukah menorah, sorry, the menorah in the Mishkan. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz asked a simple question. Why this over anything else? Aaron did so many things. Kohanim get so many better things than the Yisraelim get. One thing the Yisraelim get to do, the Nesiim get to bring, they get to bring their gifts to the Mishkan, to dedicate the Mishkan. Every day the Kohanim are working in the Mishkan, they're working in the Beis HaMikdash. They get the first Aliyah, they get the bench, they get the Duchen, they get all these great things. Why is the menorah singled out as the most, wow, now Aaron, you'll feel better because you get to light the menorah. So Rav Chaim Shmulevitz explains based on source number 9, the Medrash in Bamidbar Rabbah. So when the Medrash says, also commenting on this idea that we have to light a menorah, the Amr Yisrael lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono Shel Olam, Yisrael said to Hashem, Hashem, lanu ata omer shenari lefanecha atahu oro shel olam. You want us to light a candle for you, before you? What are we lighting a candle for you? You're the light of the world. What's our little candle going to do? You're the one who lights the world, not us. So Hashem says back to them, Amar Lahem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Lo Shani Tzarech Lachem. You're right, I don't really need your candle. I am the light of the world. Elo Shetairu Li Kederech She'arti Lachem. I want you to be able to light the candles and light up before me just like I light up before you. And skipping down a little bit, the Medrash gives a mashal. What is this referring to? This may be illustrated by a parable. We'll just read it in English. A person capable of seeing, this is translated from Rav Chaim Shmulevitz's Sefer, it's called Sichos Musar. So there's one in Hebrew, which is the original, and then there's an art scroll translation. So this translation is from that art scroll translation of the Sichos Musar. This may be illustrated by a parable. A person capable of seeing traveled together with a blind man. The seeing man turned to the blind one, saying, when we enter the house, light this candle for me and give me light. The blind man replied, be good enough to explain that while on the road you supported me and we entered the house, you accompanied me, and now you tell me to light this candle and give you light? The other man replied, in order that you should not be under an obligation to me for having accompanied you on the journey, therefore I told you to light before me. Thus, the man capable of seeing is Hashem, and the blind man is Israel. Hashem led Israel and lit the way for them, as it says, and Hashem went before them in the day. But as soon as the Mishkan was erected, Hashem called Moshe and said, illuminate before me, as it says, when you light up the candles. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz explains that this Medrash describes the act of lighting the menorah not just as another form of divine service. It's not like every other thing in the Mishkan, but rather as an act that embodies Hakaras HaTov. It embodies gratitude. It was this sublime expression of gratitude that was able to comfort Aaron for not participating actively in the inauguration of the Mishkan. For Hakaras HaTov is an obligation which weighs heavily upon the recipient, allowing him no rest until he has made some acknowledgement. Indeed, this is one of the greatest gifts of Hashem to Israel, the possibility to offer some token of repayment, as it were, for all they receive from God. The lighting of the menorah, Hashem doesn't need it. Hashem's the light of the world. The lighting of the menorah itself symbolizes Hakaras HaTov. Hashem, how can we repay you? Does he need us to light the menorah? No. But he's allowing us to light the menorah as a Hakaras HaTov, as hodah, as gratitude for everything that he does for us. So when we light our candles tonight, tomorrow night, however many days we have left, and next year, whenever you light the candles for Hanukkah, you have to remember, when you realize that this is Hodat Hashem, this is a thanking Hashem for the fact that He saved us at the times of the Chashmonaim, but as well, the Levush says, we say, Bayamim Haheim Bazman Hazeh. The Levush says that it's, in those, sorry, the translation of that is, in those days, in these days. But the Levush comments that you should read it by Yamim Ahem u'bizman hazeh. You have to make sure that when you light the candles, when you have Hodah, Hakaras HaTov Hashem, for what He did in Al Anisim, for the Jews in the time of the Chashmonaim, to realize that you're not just covering the gratitude for what He did back then, you're covering the gratitude that He does for us right now. The gratitude every day for everything that Hashem does for us, we need to have that Hakaras HaTov. So when we light those candles, which symbolize that Hakaras HaTov, we should reflect on that Hodah, the thanksgiving that we have to Hashem for everything that He does, and to take the lesson, not just for what we do for Hashem, but we do for our friends, for our parents, to remember to have Hakaras HaTov and to work on all those elements that we spoke about, whether it be how often we have Hakaras HaTov, how deep is that Hakaras HaTov, not just to look right now at what happens in front of us, but to look back and to see everything that went into that one act of gratitude, that one act of niceness, of kindness that somebody does, not just to have Hakaras HaTov then, but to look back, to have gratitude density. These are the lessons that we learn from Hanukkah that we could take with us throughout the year, even if we're not lighting candles, whatever it is, when we bow down, when we say modim, when we bow down and we think, atov shimcha l'chana el hodos, think about everything we owe Hashem, think about everything you owe your parents, think about everything you owe your spouse, think about everything you owe your children, think about your parents, I'll reiterate that, that's very important, something that that we tend to forget. But this is the lesson of Chanukah, and I wish you all a Chag Chanukah v'sameach. And once again, we will conclude by we'll ask questions, and then we'll show our Hakaras HaTov Hashem by benching afterwards. Yeah, questions?
Can we show Hakaras HaTov? State of Israel have to have Hakaras HaTov to its enemies for having turned the IDF into the most powerful force in the world. In other words, we talked about enemies before, you mentioned Egypt. Is there any real sense of that, or is that...
I mean, again, I think it's important to have Hakaras HaTov for the good. I think it's important also, first of all, to look at the good in any situation. And I'm not saying you have to invite them over and, you know, have a Hanukkah meal with them, but, you know, it is important to have this grateful outlook on life. And we did quote the Egyptian quote is an interesting one, and we do have to have Hakaras HaTov for the Egyptians. And yeah, meaning the fact that they didn't intend to do it and they really hate us, you know, I would work on the other if you have trouble with that, I'd work on the other Hakaras HaTov. You know, thank your wife beforehand, and then we'll get to Hamas later on.
I have trouble with this particular Hakaras HaTov.
Right. It's the last thing that we'll worry about on the list of Hakaras HaTov to worry about. But it's a good question. It's something, I mean, do you have to have Hakaras HaTov for the Nazis because they put us in, you know, we lived in their place, you know? So there is an extreme that we don't necessarily have to recognize, but you know, it's a good question. It's a good question. Yeah.
When it comes to Hakaras HaTov improving you and giving you the midah, I do see it in a way as an end also, because we're supposed to be a light to the world, an example. We're supposed to be Hadeshem Hashem, and when we turn into it, but when people turn into good people, the next is people say, that's a Jew.
Right.
Wow. His God must really be somebody terrific. Right. Like, you know, you look at the examples like Bob Pond with somebody. Actually, people said, oh, he was such a terrific person. And it increased people's awareness of Hashem. Right. So it led to Kiddush Hashem.
Right.
So in some respect, it is a...
Right, so I think that you're 100% correct, and there's a point that I wanted to make. I'm not sure if I made it clear enough, but they're all interconnected. Meaning, I think to an extent, to say, you know, this is really the starting point, and that's the end point. While you could make that argument, at the end of the day, it's all interconnected. Your Hakaras HaTov for Hashem and your Hakaras HaTov for others does help you, whether or not that means that the end point is, but really we're doing it for Hakaras HaTov for Hashem, or we're doing it so you embody this Hakaras HaTov, which then helps Hashem anyway, and it's all interconnected, and I'm not sure what causes A or B, but it's all one big happy Hakaras HaTov family. Any other questions? Yeah. Right. That's the element of... And the truth is that when you think about it, the idea of, we're not denying the fact that there is an idea of reciprocity in terms of Hakaras HaTov, you know, and
part of that is that that also helps everybody be a better community and be better Jews and be that even that reciprocity, even if you don't technically embody that Akar Satov, it could be that that embodiment of Akar Satov is actually to get you to be a community that reciprocates Akar Satov. So again, that, that line is, you can make arguments either way, but you're right, it's all, you know, Akar Satov is important. That's it. If you come away with anything, it's Akar Satov is important. Okay, so we're going to bench, and now we have two Kohanim, no? So you guys can fight it out.
We'll fight it out.